I'm writer and comedian Emily Winter, and this is Comedians with Ghost Stories Season 3. Today on the podcast, we have comedian and producer Thomas Attila Lewis. Tom, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Emily. This is awesome.
Thank you for doing the podcast. I'm so excited because you live in a haunted house.
I do. Here in beautiful Berkshire County, Massachusetts, in the town of Pittsfield.
Great. And how old is your house and how long have you lived there?
Oh, boy. Well, I moved to Berkshire County from San Francisco. I was California born and raised, and I moved out here in 2001 and bought this house at the end of summer 2001. It's a very old house. It's a very old chunk of land out here in the Berkshires in terms of the history of the country. And again, coming from California where there's like no history really, and it's been bulldozed over about 10 times, there's no sense of history out there. But then coming to New England where everywhere you turn there's history, it was really kind of cool coming into a house like this.
That's so awesome.
So bizarre. The area that I live in, they started to settle in the 1740s. That's such a sensitive way. There's ways to talk about this that I hope don't rub people the wrong way, but obviously, you know, colonial settlement of the area, with the First Nations people that were here. It was the Mohican tribe was in this part of Massachusetts originally, but there were not as many here left because of, you know, all the terrible things that happened and disease that spread through First Nations peoples. But what's funny is people tried to come up and settle this area, and then they kind of ran away from their settlements and because they were afraid of Indians. And when really there weren't that many Indians around, that were left, there were very few Native Americans left compared to, they had all started moving west, actually. So there were lots of reports of, well, we thought we might've heard Indians. I mean, maybe it was like guilt or something that they would settle an area. And like, we thought we heard Indians and we had to flee. But from what I can tell from these records that were left in my house, printed.
Whoa, records were left in your house.
Yeah. So a previous resident took it upon himself to come up with a bit of the history of the home and left me a binder full of land transfer documents and family tree stuff, which was really cool. And my house is an old house because it was on what became the main road between Pittsfield, Massachusetts, which is the biggest town in the county, and Albany, New York.
Okay.
So it was the Pittsfield Albany Road, and my house is right on it. So it was kind of like the major thoroughfare of the day. So there's been something going on here at this edge of town since the late 1740s, early 1750s. So the front, if you go into the basement of my house, there's a front part of the house, and the foundation you can tell is totally different. It's fieldstone foundation. So it's just stones piled up on each other without even like mortar between them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And there's the timbers holding up, you know, that the house sits on, and also up in the attic, are just these massive, thick, solid, single pieces of wood. Like, you never see this anymore. Anybody in a house built since like the 1950s, it's all 2x4s that are all nailed together.
Mm-hmm.
And this place, it's just, you can see it's one giant log, you know, goes this way, and then it meets another giant log that way. And they're held together with like wooden pegs and stuff.
Oh my God.
And there's literally tree trunks in the basement. It's just a tree trunk with bark on it holding up the floor. Like, you know, the first floor beams. Like, there's just tree trunks sitting around in there.
I'm happy that your place is still standing.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, coming from California.
Wait, can I just ask what made you want to move from San Francisco to freaking the East Coast?
Yeah. So, I had visited here a bunch before moving, and the woman I married was kind of from the area, over the border into New York State. I mean, we're right on the border of New York. Like, I'm on Pittsfield Albany Road, and the border is like right there.
Okay.
And so she was from just over the border, but we visited here. I had visited here myself, and then I came here to visit her family and stuff, and came out here and hiked and really loved it and everything. And I had been working in the internet industry in the Bay Area, and I was really kind of burnt out on it. And I could tell, like, it was not going to last much longer there, like this first internet bubble. And it was mm-hmm. so expensive to live there, and the quality of life had kind of started going down,
yeah.
you know? And
yeah.
The other thing was, I love going out into nature, and I could just see like the environmental degradation. And it's so funny, because like I still have some emails from like an old Yahoo account. People like, you're moving, how come you're doing this? And I'm like, guys, this whole place is going to burn down, you know? Like, and now it's burning. So
yeah. Oh my gosh, you predicted it 19 years ago.
And you know, there were fires up until, you know, the fires just get bigger every year. And when I was a kid, fire season was like 3 months long. Now it's 9 months long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it was scary and terrifying and unaffordable. And virtually all the people I went to high school with and college have left the Bay Area, if not California. They've all, you know, gone to Portland, Austin, you know, Chicago, New York, you know, like nobody lives, or they've gone out to the country. I have friends in like Boise, Idaho, and Nashville, and more remote places. So if I had stayed there, I would feel very like kind of alone,
you know? Yeah.
So, but I like it here, and it's really affordable to live here, and it's beautiful. So I hope if you haven't visited here, you should definitely come visit.
I haven't. Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
gorgeous.
Now I have
gorgeous.
More context for why you made the move, and yep. your home is very, sorry to go back to where we were.
Yeah.
The foundation is, this is old stuff. You got like Lincoln logs, you got like trees
yes.
holding up the floor. Yeah.
It's great. It's great. And because like, again, like back in California, like I lived in like these houses built in the 60s and 70s, and they're all falling apart, or like suddenly a flood will come. They'll have like, oh, this is a creek bed from 300 years ago, and you just had an El Nino and your house washed away. Like people's houses are regularly destroyed out west because they're so new, comparatively speaking. So if I have a house where the front foundation was built in the 1740s or 50s, you know, nothing really big comes through the area. You know, like there's no floodplain, there's no landslides, none of that is happening if this house has been here for 250 plus years,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming on 300 years. So it's pretty stable. It's a stable place and stable area. So the other part of the foundation, you can tell they like doubled the size of the house in the 1870s, according to these records as well.
Oh, the new part.
Yeah, the new part is from 1878.
1870s. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's, and so it's kind of like in a Victorian style. You know, it's still like clapboards, and it's not like a Gothic Victorian, like not like a Adams Family house or anything like that.
Okay.
It's still pretty, you know, it's got a little bit of detailing, and it's, you know, it's a really, it's still charming, but not over the top, like some crazy Gothic Victorian house. So, yeah, there's been a house here forever. And, you know, it was part of a pretty big farm. Like the original allotment was 100 acres here. And over time, like bits of it were sold off, and then bits of it were added on to. The people who really started to build this place in the 1750s was the Francis family. And they kind of oddly, they were Baptists, which
okay.
was kind of unusual for like the seven. That's like not a super common religion, you know, for colonists coming out this way. So that was kind of unusual. And there's actually a Baptist church across the street from my house, but it wasn't a Baptist church when I moved here. It was like one of the former barns of my house. And there's all these other houses around me that used to be barns for this house that they turned into houses, you know, in centuries later.
So, yeah.
Like, it's funny, you walk by and like, oh, and it kind of, there's like some similar styling or something. Like, that was a barn for my house down the street.
And now it's my neighbor. Yeah.
And cool. now they're neighbors. So, you know, the house now is currently on about an acre, with, you know, much more modern houses nearby on smaller lots going down the street. So, yeah, this was a farm for a long time with the Francis family. And this family, they're in the town records. They fought in the Revolutionary War, which is pretty cool. Some of them are buried down the street in an old cemetery that is, you know, not a currently used cemetery, but it's, you know, you can go down there and find members of the Francis family down there.
Oh my God.
And one of the, from that family, one of the cool descendants, he was, let me see if I can find it here. He became a renowned carpenter and cabinet maker, so like fine carpentry. And when he left here and started moving west, he kind of became renowned for his carpentry. And he ended up making this elaborate kind of folding box that holds the original Book of Mormon in Salt Lake City.
Whoa, so, that's so cool. And he lived there? That's awesome.
He was born in this house and lived here till his 20s before he started to move west. And he somehow met up with members of the Mormon faith, I think when he was in Cleveland and then in Iowa, and they commissioned him to build this cabinet that the Book of Mormon sits in some secret chamber in the big cathedral in Salt Lake City now.
So wow, that's awesome.
Totally bizarre. So we, you know, we kind of feel like that family was here well into the, you know, till like the Civil War era.
Okay.
The Francis family. And actually there's a bunch of, a couple census forms here from 1800 and 1810 that enumerate the family that was here. And what's really creepy, but it's also kind of cool, like they have the columns, and the columns are literally say on the census forms back then, like free white people, like literally, and the columns male, female, child, you know, and everything. And then there's all the way down, there's a column for indentured servants, and then a column for slaves.
Oh my God.
And the sexes of indentured servants and slaves. So what's pretty cool that even way back then, this house, maybe because of the Baptist faith, you know, that was up in Northern Baptist faith, there were no slaves ever on this property, you know, even all the way back then. And Massachusetts was the first place that a enslaved person argued for their freedom based on the Constitution. And it was upheld, and immediately Massachusetts outlawed slavery. And this predates anything Abraham Lincoln ever said or did.
You are one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever had on this podcast.
Well, we have, it's kind of famous. The woman was named Mum Bett when she was enslaved, and she became Elizabeth Freeman after she won her freedom. And she had a, the argument made on her behalf was an attorney from the Sedgwick family, which they were renowned attorneys and judges, made the argument for her in court, and just based on the Constitution alone. And that's what ended up having all slaves in Massachusetts being one of the first states to have slavery abolished. Not that it was all great, and not that all problems were immediately solved by that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it happened here first in Berkshire County, which is pretty cool. And we have a number of monuments to her. And there's some Sedgwick residences still around as well. And their lineage trait, you know, goes down to Edie Sedgwick from the Warhol fame, is one of the Sedgwicks from
Wow.
Here. So yeah, anyway, so sorry. I'm gonna have a couple of transgressions here. But that's fine. It's totally weird. And they have a really cool burial plot down in the town of Stockbridge where Mumbet is actually, you know, buried. Elizabeth Freeman is buried there under the name Elizabeth Freeman. And the Sedgwicks have this really kind of creepy circle of graves. It's like a auditorium, like there's a center point and all the graves radiate out.
Oh my God.
From a center point. It's the Sedgwick Grave Circle, and you can go check it out and visit it.
Bury me in a grave circle, man. I never even heard of that before. Well,
if you're in Brooklyn, there's a huge grave circle at the big cemetery there. If you ever go into Brooklyn,
there's a super creepy. I've been to Greenwood a bunch, but I've never seen the grave circle.
It's really creepy, and you can walk through the crypt there as well, where the graves are. There's people in these crazy columbariums and a crypt to walk. It's probably the creepiest place, one of the creepiest places I've ever been. But there's an enormous grave circle in that cemetery, and all sorts of amazing, crazy. Like Basquiat is buried there. A bunch of people are buried in that cemetery. It's really cool, and it's a beautiful place too. But anyway, so the Francis family was here forever. And sometimes when we hear noises, sometimes there's creaking and weird sounds. We'll say, okay, it's, especially at night when we hear stuff, we'll say, okay, it's bedtime for Francis. Bedtime for Francis. Let's settle down. Like we'll have weird groans or like, cause it's an older house, but it's doing great. It's held up.
Right.
So the next family that was here was the Jordan family, who really made it into a much more hardcore kind of farm. And they built up more buildings, and there are these hilarious town records of this guy's barns being destroyed by tornado and fire and collapsing. So it seemed like every like 5 or 6 years he would have to rebuild barns somewhere because of some calamity. But he was a butcher, so they raised a lot of sheep here. Sheep were a big thing in Berkshire County because it was all grazing land. It was totally deforested by 1850, and there was just rolling green hills, and they had lots of pasture animals like dairies and sheep. So merino wool was a big thing, and they had a million in merino wool sheep in this county. And we find around this house, like every time I'm like digging to plant a bush or tree, we have like this crazy pile of bones of, you know, sheep bones, cow bones.
Oh like, my God. You find bones around your house, animal bones?
Constantly.
Oh my God.
Constantly.
That would freak me out.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know how many like jaw bones I found and sheep teeth and goat and cow teeth. And yeah. So he had he would slaughter, and it worked. It made sense because it was on the main road. And if you're going to and from Albany and Pittsfield, like you would stop and get fresh meat from here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it totally made sense. He had a whole bunch of kids, the Jordan family. And, I forgot, his name was like Jedediah.
One of those creepy cabin in the woods names.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Crazy names of him and his kids here. So he had, some boys who, one of which continued the, running, this as a meat producing farm, after he passed. And, he also had two daughters who lived here, the youngest of which lived here till like 1959. So he built the place over in 1878, had these kids, and she was the last one to live here till 1959. She and her older sister became teachers, and the older sister was a principal, and they never married.
Oh, that's interesting.
They stayed in this house, and they never married or moved on. Like after their brother I believe when he passed away at a relatively younger age, like in his 40s or something, they had a farm manager run the place to continue producing meat while they taught in the schools.
Interesting.
And until they started selling off bits of land and that kind of thing. But, you know, again, you know, when you have a house, like the front part was built in the mid 1750s, just, and you read like everybody, all the people who were born, like literally born in this house and who died in this house over like almost 300 years. I mean, yeah. It's like kind of creepy, you know, on the one hand, because we're so used to having those events separated from a living space.
Absolutely.
You know, you go and do that in hospitals or, right. You know, you die in an assisted living place or something like that. You know, you're not born in your house and die in your house.
Right.
There's a little cottage across the street from me. And this gentleman has since passed away in like about the last 5 or 6 years, but he was born in that house in like 19, I think when he died, he was about 90. So this guy across the street, he was born in his house and he died over there. Like, that's like the last, you know.
I can't imagine. I think it's a miracle that I've lived in my apartment for 5 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, this house is the longest I've ever lived in a place is here. But so these spinster, you know, I mean, it's hard. I don't want to assign like a persona to these sisters who lived here, but you know, you can kind of imagine, you know, a couple of sisters. One was born pre-1900, or I mean, actually, they were both born pre-1900,
mm-hmm.
And one in like the 1880s, like kind of end of the Victorian age, coming into the 21st century. You know, like they wore those, you know, those hook and button boots, you know,
yes.
You know, the shoes and bustles, and you know, like. How from that era, like how much of that they must have held on to for so long, being in their own world here, because they never married and then went out and had to go into the world outside of this house and this property.
Meanwhile, like the 1950s are happening and like everything's changed, but they have no idea.
And they have they're here and they go to the school and do the school things and, you know, come back home. And so we've been here and have heard sounds when we're there. You know, animals can come in and out of this place because it's a fieldstone basement. So, you know, we constantly have chipmunks coming in and rolling acorns around in the floor space.
Okay.
You know, we know what those sounds are.
Mm-hmm.
And we can hear field mice squeaking and all that kind of stuff. And we had, when I first moved in, there was probably about 1,000 bats that lived in the attic. Which is still filled with bat guano. So we had lots of, yeah. So I haven't gone and cleaned that up because it's just like, how do I even begin to address this? But they're not there anymore. I had the whole place re-roofed and everything. And we had some birds living up there for a while and that kind of stuff. And we'll have house wrens live in the wall, you know, and they're charming. But so we know what the animal sounds are, right?
Yeah.
There are sounds that are not animal sounds that have happened here. That my kids have figured out, like, you know, we've been downstairs and we know we're the only people downstairs. There's no one upstairs. Like, you know, our cat would have been downstairs with us.
Right.
And now later our dog, like, you know, where's the cat? Where's Socks? You know, like, oh, they're right here with us. So like what? And the sounds that they figured out that we would hear are, it sounds like high heels, but you know, but kind of harder. So like little hobnail shoes, like hook and button boots, click in and little steps, right? Like tick, 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 you know, like little steps upstairs. And they're the ones that figured out, they're like, it sounds like somebody's tapping on the floor, but it's moving around. And like, and it sounds like it's hard, you know, it sounds like maybe it's even metal tapping on the wood.
These are my kids.
Yeah. Oh, and then we've been down there, you know, because we'll like, you know, certainly we have TVs on and stuff, but then there's lots of quiet time. And, you know, throughout the winter, especially, you know, I have a fire going in the fireplace. I have another kind of stove in the basement, you know, so we're kind of moving around and stoking these fires and stuff, but there's sitting around reading and that kind of thing. And then you'll hear other sounds. and they've heard the sound of chalk on a chalkboard because they know what that sound like. We don't have a chalkboard in the house, but they know the sound. And reading about these sisters, I didn't even know this was, you know, in this book that was here, but, you know, they would have students come by for tutor lessons. So they've heard those sounds in here, you know, and, you know, they're here. And so I went and got this book because we actually, the owners, the people we bought it from remained friends with one of my neighbors. And so we would occasionally encounter them, you know, for like a summer party or, you know, whatever over there. And, you know, he had left this book and I'm like, I don't have time for this, you know, like to go through this book and everything. And he had mentioned that like, there's like an empty little plot of land across the street. It's small. It's, you know, it's not big enough for any kind of use. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, the city is putting this up for auction. You know, I don't know if you want to buy it. I don't think anybody can build on it. It's too small. They wouldn't sewer or water line to it or whatever, but maybe you would want to plant something over there or whatever. And I'm like, I don't really have bare money, you know, like to buy just a piece of land I can't use for anything. He's like, well, it's funny because the previous owners, they set it aside for it to be a schoolhouse when they donated it to the city. I'm like, what? Like who the previous owners? Like, oh yeah. You know, the two owners before us were these old ladies who were teachers in the school system for like 60 years. And they wanted a school built out on the west side of town. And that's why they gave it to the city. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what are you talking about? Cause like we had heard Little Lady Steps upstairs. He's like, oh yeah, it's in the book. And like the book, he's like, yeah, I left you that binder, you know, and I put all the family trees of stuff. And, you know, I looked that up and a friend was a history buff and it's all in there. You know, your house is a historic, it's on the historic register. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, so I went and looked at the book and we found, you know, this info of the teachers.
The Jordan sisters.
The Jordan sisters.
That haunt your house. Yeah.
That haunt the house and that are here.
Does it scare your kids?
No, you know, my daughter would say, oh, I heard the little ladies, you know, like when she was particularly little. And, you know, she's, what the funny thing is that, you know, through no, you know, discernible influence for me, like she was a great, great student in high school and, you know, like top of her class. And, you know, was going to she's actually in this crazy COVID time. She's actually on campus at Vassar.
Oh my God.
And, you know, great students and scholarships and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, she, like the teachers, you know, the school mistresses were kind of influencing her at night and like reading to her or whatever. And my son is actually, he's a really good student as well. And it's like, oh, like, you know, it's good to have ghost school teachers in the house. Like that's a good thing. Like it's actually percolated through to them. So
in 2020, I have heard so many stories of nice ghosts. Like we're doing this podcast. I feel like the way the world is going over the last like 15 years, they're just like, we feel bad for you guys. We're just going to be nice. Like there's all these great ghosts out there.
Yeah. It's, you know, we lucked out with ours. We certainly lucked out. And, you know, I think, you know, again, I try to look at like, oh, you know, that they've something, you know, maybe they've had a good influence or, and it's also just been good that my kids' perceptions of these sounds were of a positive nature rather than being like it causing fear, you know, to hear these things, and their interpretation were positive interpretations of the sounds. I mean, it is totally creepy. Like you're sitting there and you're like that, and you can hear the tapping going from room to room. And, you know,
is this when when you're upstairs or downstairs?
It's when you're downstairs.
And then you hear it above you. Okay. Yeah.
And you hear it above you going from one room to another room.
And like, how often does this happen?
When when we're able to notice it, I mean, it's usually when things, when we're spending more times in the house, because, you know, we're very outdoorsy and the kids are always in sports. So in all the warmer months, you know, we're gone. We're not here. And then on top of it, you know, we don't have air conditioning in this house, but it was designed so that when you open the windows, the air flows through it from west to east. But having the windows open, you know, you hear more outside stuff than you do inside stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when I put the storm windows on and we close and seal up for the late fall and winter, you hear more inside stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're probably going around in the summer. But I also like to think that, well, we don't hear them in the summer because they're on summer vacation.
So, that's great.
So like teachers, they would take off and go somewhere. But, you know, like it would be the fall and winter, you know, because that's when we're here.
And so besides the Jordan sisters, you have had other experiences, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean the weirdest thing outside of them and the crazy like animal interactions we've had, which are many because we're on the west side of town, kind of out near a state forest and everything. So I know you've had a previous guests talk about like coyotes and that we have coyotes like you wouldn't believe. Around here we have like a large pack of probably a couple dozen coyotes, and they split up into two packs during the day, and they will kind of call out to each other like in the mid-afternoon. You know, if it's quiet, you can hear them, the yipping coming from two different directions. And then like at 1:30 in the morning, they are all back together up on the hill. And they go into a whole, it's not just howling, like coyotes make all these other vocalizations that are truly creepy. They sound like some of it, like, you know, while one or two are kind of howling and making barky yip sounds, some of them, they just yammer like a person who has like completely lost it. It's higher pitched. So it's like, you know, like maybe like a somebody going into total hysterics, like just,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, like yammering away, like, you know, and it goes for about 15-20 minutes, and then they you know kind of calm down for the evening. And they've been like right on the property, and you know, it's crazy. So when we moved here, we brought our venerable cat, Peanut, with us. And she was kind of this orange and white, fluffy cat. You know, kind of longer haired cat, not a Persian or anything like that, but just kind of a fluffy cat. And she was kind of the queen of her existence around the place. She was an indoor cat, mm-hmm. In San Francisco. And she was old. I mean, my wife got her, she was a stray in Boston. My wife got her in the 80s.
Oh my God.
And took her in and took care of her. So when I first met her in the late 90s, she was already probably like 17 years old or so.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then we brought her here in 2001. So she was probably like 21 years old.
Wow.
Little less orange, you know?
Yeah.
Getting a bit more white. And, you know, we had heard the coyotes pretty much when we first moved in here, and because it was summer and we had the windows open, and we'd hear these sounds like, oh my God, there's coyotes all. So she would like to come out and sun herself. But we kept her near the house. Also, mm-hmm. like I've been a member of Massachusetts Audubon, and you know, like I'm very much against cats preying upon birds and wildlife. And it's mm-hmm. also very unhealthy to have a quote outdoor cat. So, mm-hmm. For the cat's own health. And
good
I love
for
cats.
You.
So, yeah. Yeah. So they're, you know, they get run over, they get into fights, they get diseases, you know, it's not a good existence, especially for poor feral cats. I feel terrible. But so we keep an eye on her, and she'd sun herself, and then she'd want to go in and that kind of stuff. And she had a great time, you know, being here. She would, you know, inside track down some of the field mice that would make their way in through my stone foundation. So she was very handy for that. And she never had to deal with that out west. So she was like, hey, this is like, you know, justified my existence in a certain way. my daughter is older. So you know, she liked Peanut, but my son, like, she and Peanut, like, had a great relationship. Like, mm-hmm. they had a real connection, and she would follow him around. And even though she was older, he could, you know, when he was a toddler, he could just kind of, like, hold on to her and, like, roll on the floor, and she would just be, aww, like, in her glory, she, you know, even though he was, you know, like, you know how toddlers pick up animals? It's, like, not quite
not
the
good.
Most, yeah, ergonomic, you know, and Tina was just, like, attention is great. I'm, like, I have no aww problem with this attention. This is good. This is awesome. So one day we had her outside, and this, and, you know, she'd been here a number of years, and she, like, disappeared.
Aww.
And we're like, oh crap, like, where is she? You know, we looked under the porch, we looked under where she could have gotten, and she was gone for like a week. Like, we were like, well, that's it. Like, you know, she strayed away. Maybe she got hit by a car. Like, we went looking for her on the road. And then we're like, well, you know, there's coyotes all around us, even during the mm-hmm. daytime. And we're like, a coyote got her. Like, that's what happens to outdoor cats.
Mm-hmm.
And also smaller dogs, even bigger dogs out here can get taken. So you want to keep an eye on your animals. And it was just like, oh God, we screwed up. Like, you know, this is terrible. That was kind of it. And my son was like, where's Peanut? Where's Peanut? And then she came back, and, like, you know, she had this long hair, and granted, you know, we would kind of let her get shaggy, and mm-hmm. she would sometimes get, like, dreadlocks, mm-hmm. you know, that we would kind of pull out, you know, and stuff. And after a week, we hear a meow, and, like, there's Peanut. Peanut's back, you know, after a week. And we're like, what the? And she was all, like, brushed. Like, she had, like, this immaculate coat. You know,
oh my God.
Like, and cleaned up, and, you know, was looking very proud of herself. And we couldn't tell where she had come from or what was, you know, which direction she came from. And my daughter and son is like, maybe the sisters took her away, you know, and cleaned her up or something like that. They thought, like, the school sisters,
yeah,
somehow absconded with her in or around the house and had cleaned her up, you know. And we also thought, like, yeah, probably some, you know, somebody, some cat person, or took care of her nearby and trimmed her up and everything, and, like,
some kind soul,
yeah, took care of her. And then, like, you know, Pina's like, well, that was pretty good. That was a good little vacation, and I'm going to go back to my family and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was funny that the kids thought that somehow, like, maybe the school mistresses could have spirited her away and mm-hmm. just wanted to have her for a while. You know, Pina was certainly getting old, and mm-hmm. She passed away a few years later. I think my son was maybe about 6 or so.
Okay.
And so Pina was probably about, like, again, she was a stray when my wife got her in Boston, but she had had her for like 26 years. So
oh my
we don't
God.
Know how old she was before that. So, you know, sadly she, you know, it was kind of like her kidneys kind of finally, that's something that happens with cats, is their kidneys just kind of go after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And she was gone, you know, and we were pretty sad about it, but also kind of recognizing she had this great life and everything. And about a month after she went, and this was, I think she went in late spring. And so it was about summer, still kind of, it can still be chilly here in the mornings and springtime. My son is at this, on the second floor, we have this window that looks out kind of on part of the backyard, and he looks out and he's like, hey, Peanut. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And we were all upstairs in the morning here for some reason. I come over and there is an orange and white cat, like, sunning herself over by the, we've never seen, there's been no other, like, we had a random black cat come through our property on again, off again, and we knew who mm-hmm. the owner of that cat was. But we never had any other cats around here, you know, for the coyote reason. Like, your cat, if you let it out, doesn't, you
right.
know, survive.
Yeah.
And we look at this cat, and it's just like, it is Peanut. She is lying, oh, like sunning herself, and she's in the total Peanut position. You know, she would like lie down on her side and kind of be up on an elbow and would kind of flick her tail up and down and with this rhythm back and forth. And like, we all went to the window and we all saw her. Okay. She was there just laying there in the sun. Like she liked to do when we would come out and start working in the garden in the morning.
Yeah.
And it's Peanut, like four people saw her, you know, and we all come downstairs and the cat's gone.
Oh my God.
And we're just like, what the hell? Like, and we never saw any orange and white cat here. We never saw one before Peanut. We've never seen one after Peanut, you know, in the area. And you're like, we have a dog now and we walk everywhere and we know where the neighborhood cats are.
Yeah.
All around us, you know, and in this area. And,
that's so sweet.
You know, we're like, she came back to like, you know, my son, you know, it was about six. And my daughter, eight, you know, like, well, she came back to just let us know she's okay. And then they added, and maybe she also came back to see the sisters, you know, so like that was totally mind blowing. You know, and I mean, I love animals, and I think there is a real like connection between people and animals.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, is special. Maybe not as special as that crazy octopus guy that's on.
Like, I know. I was sobbing. I couldn't finish it. I still have like 20 minutes left because I was just crying, and I was like, it's 3 a.m. I can't sleep. I gotta watch Emily in Paris now.
We were watching it, and you know, like there's something at some point, like we were like, is this guy going to fuck the octopus? Is that something that's about to happen? Like it was going like to this direction. We're like, we're not sure. I mean, we watched it to the end and it's great. And you know, all the interactions and how that was put together was a lot of fun. But like, there was a point at which we were like, what is going on here? He was like, I was enthralled with her beauty. It was like, okay, let's calm, like, you know, she embraced me. This was the last time we ever had physical contact. It's like, oh my God, like, dude, like you have a wife and son.
Go on a date. Yeah,
exactly. What is happening? You know, but I don't know about a connection as far as that, but I definitely believe in this human animal connection. And we certainly had that with her and especially my son. Like they were like best buds. Like they would, you know, for him being six when she passed, you know, not really kind of, you know, that's kind of a big ask at that age to put that like, oh, here's mortality and here's all this stuff. He got that she wasn't gone, but I don't think he fully understood the mortality of it. I think my daughter did, but she also kind of recognized like, you know, maybe this is what's happening, you know, like that you can still have the imagination of like that kind of visitation. And also again, that we've never seen anything, you know, here we are, what, almost 12 years later, and we've never had seen any animal like that around here, again, before or since, so.
Amazing. Well, yeah. You still have the Jordan sisters, at least.
We still have the Jordan sisters around, and, you know, I'll be sealing up that, because we're supposed to have snow here Friday, so I'll be sealing up the storm windows, and, we'll have all the inside sounds happening again, and we'll hear them tapping around. So I look forward to it. And, you know, it's like, oh, they're here. They're checking in on us. They're doing their thing.
Amazing.
And especially during COVID when my son, he's still in high school, you know, kind of definitely needs motivation to get through online and hybrid learning. You know,
like, yeah.
So please, you know, just tap on his door, make sure he's doing okay. He's getting the work done and it is motivated. So, but that's our freaky little house, old house.
Yeah, up here in the I love it. It's freaky, but it's sort of sweet. And yeah, it's really rare now to know so much history and have so much history in your house. And that's really awesome. So thank you so much for doing the podcast, Tom. And also, what projects would you like to plug and where can people find you on the internet?
Well, oh boy, you know, geez, it's, I produce a lot of comedy shows up here and a number of different venues. I hope the venues come back, mm-hmm. you know? So I've had like a almost 10-year long run at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady with a show called Pretty Much the Best Comedy Show. And that's been going there 10 years and we've had incredible, you know, performances there of people. I hope we can come back there. You know, I mean, I have ongoing shows at four different venues up here and geez, we really hope they all come back. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter at TomDog, TOMDOG. And you know, it's kind of, I'll put the occasional joke in there, but it's kind of hard to promote anything because there's really not a lot going on comedy-wise.
No.
Right now, it's like, you know, I'm a kind of a hardcore leftist, and so if maybe you don't like somebody verging on total socialism, you shouldn't follow me. But I just, you know, I just want people to have healthcare. You know, like that's
fair.
That's kind of just a thing like that drives me. So. There will be a lot of that on there if you do follow me. I would appreciate it. But one other thing I have going, I'm in a cabaret troupe called Gypsy Lane, and we are looking at spring shows. I'm so lucky to perform with you know, this is a female organized and directed cabaret troupe, and I just am incredibly privileged to perform with them. They're on Instagram at Gypsy Lane. And if that's something you're into you know, definitely follow them. And I'm just lucky to be the MC and for sometimes comic relief on the shows. So,
amazing. You
know, a lot of fun. And I super appreciate this. You know, I'm a big fan of the podcast and you've had like some of my friends on here and they're telling stuff I never knew. And, you know, I love it. So please keep going on. I know you've been busy writing I'm so glad that the podcast came back and that I got to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for doing it. This was awesome.
Thank you for listening to Comedians with Ghost Stories. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like this podcast, please go ahead and rate and review it on iTunes, which will help other people find it and make me very happy. You can also support the podcast by Venmoing me directly at Emily-Winter. You can follow me on social media, Emily MC Winter on Instagram and Twitter. And you can join my mailing list via my website, emilywintercomedy.com. And I appreciate any and all of those things. They help me survive and help me thrive and help me tell you about, hopefully, in 2021, live events that we'll have and upcoming episodes of the podcast and other fun stuff I've been working on. Anyway, that's all. Have a great day.